Welcome to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. We introduce you to the voices of community thought leaders and change makers who are working on solutions that face our fellow individual community members, neighborhoods, cities, and our region. This is George Koster, your host. Today's convening and conversation with Stockton, Tracy, and San Joaquin County community leaders is our final follow-up conversation from both the town hall event we hosted in May of 2019 and the original 12-episode documentary series titled From Bankruptcy to Reinvention, The City of Stockton, that we produced in 2016 and 2017. The title of today's episode is The Opportunity That Is Stockton, Where Do We Go From Here? A Reflective Conversation. With the loss of Mayor Tubbs' re-election, we wanted to bring together as many of the voices featured in the original radio documentary series to have them update the community and listeners on their work going forward within the context of both a new city administration, a global pandemic, and an economic meltdown.
Welcome, everybody. Just want to welcome you to KWDC, 93.5 FM here in Stockton. Thanks for hosting it. Lane, thank you so much for being our MC. Just like you were back in Memorial Day of 2019 and our last town hall conversation where we got folks together. So I'm going to turn it over to you so that we can start the invocation.
Wonderful. And I want to say thank you to everyone listening on KWDC. Thank you to everyone tuning in on Facebook Live and to everyone in this Zoom room with me. It feels cozy on this warm evening, hopefully warm for us, but I know a cold night for many in our community. And I'm just honored that you have chosen to join us for the opportunity that is Stockton, this opportunity to really listen to some of our major community leaders, not only from our city, but throughout our county. We're going to start this program with some reflections on really what's going on in the world and start in quick succession. I'm going to introduce three of our community leaders first. Councilmember Dan Areola, then Councilmember Kimberly Wormsley, and followed up with a real invocation from our pastor on the line, Pastor Curtis Smith. But to kick us off, I'm going to ask to pass the Zoom mic over to my friend, my brother, my sister, I might say sometimes, Councilmember Dan Areola, who represents the great city of Tracy and also serves in public service throughout our county. Why don't you kick us off, please?
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for the invitation and thank you for having this. This is incredible to see all of your beautiful faces. And I think just, you know, representing the city of Tracy, I just want to thank you for making sure that our other cities are here and at the table and in the forefront of this conversation. I think that we need to really kind of conceptualize and understand that the problems that we're facing, particularly with COVID, there are no boundaries. And we need to really understand that, you know, the virus doesn't work that way. We need to be working together. And for City of Tracy, we've had 48 deaths. And every single time I hear those numbers, it breaks my heart because these are members of our community. These are parents. These are kids. You know, these are our brothers and sisters. These are essential workers. And they're members of our community. And we're experiencing that throughout the community. And so forever we can do as a city, I want to make sure that, you know, the city of Stockton knows that everyone throughout the community and county knows that we are here to work alongside you, with you, and we're in this together. And we're, you know, proud to be here on behalf of City of Tracy. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Areola. Also representing our city government on this line, I am going to next welcome one of our newly elected city leaders, proudly representing South Stockton. Please join me in welcoming Councilmember Kimberly Wormsley.
Thank you so much, Lang, for that introduction. I think that the effects of COVID is just, it's indescribable at this point. In the last 7 days, I've lost three former coworkers who unfortunately lost their lives to COVID-19. Not only because the impact of COVID, but also in order to access a medical bed, people were waiting. Whether it was a car accident or a broken limb, or in my family, I had an emergency with my daughter who was in the emergency department for almost 3 days because she was waiting for a bed because the capacity was at zero. And so our community has been impacted significantly. And that's the sad reality. However, I do want to recognize the strengths of our community and neighborhoods. And so today we honor and reflect for those who we have lost, but we also acknowledge the strength and the love and compassion that many of our community members have demonstrated in the last nearly 1 year. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Wormsley. And as we are kind of rooting ourselves in what is happening in our world and in our community, I think it's very important that we listen to our spiritual and religious leaders. So at this time, it's my great honor to ask Pastor Curtis Smith to share some words with us before we get into the rest of our conversation.
Thank you, Lang. I'm going to be giving our invocation, you know, for this evening. We've heard from, you know, both of our council members here that this has been a tragedy to our community, to our city, our county, our nation. And so I am going to be praying for my Christian faith tradition. It has been faith as if someone who has lost family members as well to this. It's been my faith to actually carry me through and this time and to give us strength, you know, as a family to, you know, to be together and to be there for each other as much as we can when we really almost can't. But that's what's been able to connect us to. So if you would join me in this prayer this evening, I appreciate it. And thank you again for the opportunity. God of mercy, God of grace, God of love, God of justice, we come to you today for comfort. We come to you today for peace. And we come to you in love. We gather in this space together to lament, to honor, and also to carry out the assignment that you have for us to do collectively, and that's to do justice and love mercy. We're lifting up all the families who have many dear loved ones who have lost their lives to this deadly virus called COVID-19. We pray for their hearts. We pray for them to be comforted. We pray those have shed many tears. We lift up a special prayer of strength and healing for those who are in the hospitals right now fighting for their lives. The many families who are unable to see or touch their loved ones. We pray for the endurance for the doctors, the nurses, the hospital staffs, the frontline workers, the essential workers, those who are essential, however, not named as such. We pray for the peace of our city. We pray for the healing of our city. We pray for the activation of liberty and justice for all. Hear us, be with us, and this I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor Curtis. As we are rooting ourselves in what has happened over the past 9 to 12 months and before, and talking in a moment about what comes forward, as of last night in San Joaquin County, there have been 844 deaths and over 30,000 cases of COVID. I would ask you to please join me in a moment of silence for all the lives that have been impacted and lost due to the pandemic, and also due to the dual pandemic of systemic racism and other forms of oppression. Thank you. So again, if you are joining us tonight, either on Facebook or on KWDC or one of our other many digital platforms, you have come to hear from and to uplift the stories of a community of leaders in this city, in this county, who are really trying together to build a more just, more equitable, more progressive, and more humane city. My name is Lang Luntau. I have the great honor of serving as the executive director of the Reinvent Stockton Foundation. But you didn't come to hear me. You came to hear some of our amazing leaders who have been profiled in the wonderful series of interviews that was produced by one of the leaders that you'll hear on the line today, Mr. George Koster. If you haven't already listened to the interviews, I would encourage you to do so. And I might ask George to share in a moment how you can access those. And today, we're really excited to talk with some of the people and organizations that were profiled, or maybe folks who have come into Stockton or expanded their work in the time since those interviews happened, to really reflect on the state of our city and where we're going. At this moment, actually, George, do you want to just give a quick reminder of how people can access that if they haven't yet heard the radio series?
Sure. So thanks, Elaine. Just go to my website, georgecoster.com, and then you'll see up in the right-hand corner, Voices of the Community. Click on that. It brings you to our landing page, and then there's a box that says Stockton, and there's the 12 interviews, plus episode 13 is the town hall meeting we had in 2019. There's also a video attached to that, a short one, and the long form if you wanted to listen to the whole 2.5 hours. And then also you can listen to the unedited, because the shows were put together for 30-minute radio shows with KWDC. Thanks again to Leo and the KWDC team to broadcast those. And they were just broadcast again this last week. But you could stream them and stream the town hall. I think the town hall was really great because it included youth leaders along with all of the community leaders. Some of them are on our Zoom meeting today.
Wonderful. Thank you, George. And we'll come back to that at the end of this presentation. At this time, I am going to start passing it to some of the leaders on the line who are the voices that we really want to amplify. I could be a hype person for all of these people. I won't do long introductions. I just do want to name that I love all of the people deeply on this line, and I will ask them to introduce themselves. But the first question I'm going to pass out is really just around how, like, what the state of our city is. And the first question is going to go to Janae, the director of Stockton Scholars. So the question I'd like to ask you is, please share with us your reflections on the state of our community, you know, from COVID to the domestic terrorism that took place in Washington, D.C., to our new president and vice president in Stockton. There's new leadership. All of this has an impact on the work that you do. What are your thoughts, Janae, on the state of Stockton?
Well, thank you for having me and for that introduction. Again, my name is Janae Aptaker, and I am the proud director of the Stockton Scholars Program. For those who may not be familiar, Stockton Scholars is a College Promise scholarship program that we're really working to defeat the educational crisis in Stockton. We know about 17% of adults over the age of 24 have a higher education degree. And so we are working to combat that and make sure that students have everything they need to pursue higher education. In regards to your question, I agree with everyone who opened the space. COVID has absolutely been devastating for our community. One of the first things we did as a program is surveyed our students when COVID first hit, and we saw that students had to move out of their dorms in an emergency or did not have access to Wi-Fi or computers when being off campus. We saw another recent survey that we conducted. Many students indicated that they're suffering from increased levels of anxiety. Some indicated suicidal thoughts or possibly eating disorders, other things. So we're seeing the stress and the effects of COVID have had a huge impact. Some have lost family members or whatnot. So that's definitely been a huge one for us. I think another part is our program was founded by Mayor Michael Tubbs and Lang Lentow. And just in relation to the narrative and everything happening in the community and nationally, we've been very affected by disinformation campaigns as a program. And that's very unfortunate because Stockton Scholars is not a political program. We're all about students, and it really supports students and makes sure that they have everything they need to get through college. And it's just interesting how the impacts have taken a toll to a certain extent, where students question if our program is real or if they're going to get a scholarship, yet we've given out over $1 million in scholarships to just 2 classes of students. And we really want students to be able to take advantage of that information. And I just have seen how this kind of disinformation has been mirrored on the national stage. And with what we've seen in the last 3 weeks with the insurrection and folks not really believing the truth. So it's definitely had an impact. So we're happy to continue supporting our students and love all the leaders on this call. Thank you. Many of you have collaborated with us, and we look forward to continuing to do so.
Thank you, Janae. I know that we heard some of your reflections in your introductions and the invocation, but I'm wondering if maybe Pastor Curtis would be willing to share his perspectives on the state of Stockton.
Okay, great. The state of Stockton. It's hard to answer that succinctly, just to be very direct. As I'm concerned, is that if I have a word concerned about the state of Stockton right now, basically being named as the most diverse, it seems that this is, it appears as we stepped back, I should say, in the sense of how we are looking at maybe representation of the most marginalized, of the people of color, of some of the things that we have, I say, fought for, some of the issues and things that we have fought for, the threats against some of those things, and some of them haven't been, I should say, named in public, but like I should say, in my arena, there's a lot of concern for the state, I should say, our future. And for particularly just starting out the year with the situation that happened with Devin Carter, you know, because it's lifting that up, and then still some of the things that still we're dealing with when it comes to our law enforcement agencies, and basically the thought of who's important, I should say, or humanity itself, who's human, who deserves the disparities that COVID has basically lifted up as far as which communities are affected. You know, that has been things that have been here that we've known about. But the pandemic, like you said, we have two pandemics. The pandemic has just basically escalated and I should say lightened us to the pandemic that really exists and the disparities that we have between our counties, and there's so many different breaches that need to be repaired. And so for me, I believe that, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of accountability in different areas that we have for our elected officials, but we have work to do. I'm very concerned. I have to stay hopeful. My faith puts me there because I look at little stories and little testimonies of community members who are, you know, doing well in spite of, and who are making it because of their endurance, because we have some strong people in our community. We have some brilliant people in our community. We have some great entrepreneurs. And so in spite of it all, especially for people in the Black community, is we've learned how to make it in the midst of struggle. We learned how to turn our pain into purpose and make it our passion and make it our life's mission. And so this is nothing new to us, but it's still, I am concerned. I don't feel really a step forward so much as I'm really concerned about how far we have stepped back.
Thank you. And I really deeply appreciate how you're able to pull together so many current events, the values that bind us together as a community, and hold us to account around how we're defending some of those values in a city that is the most diverse in America, right? Councilmember Wormsley or Councilmember Areola, do you have anything to add to that?
I think the only thing that I really want to amplify, especially, I would not be a licensed clinical social worker if I don't talk about this. Janae hit something that really resonated with me, and that is the subject area of our emotional wellness and health. As we're talking about the loss of lives, as we're talking about being able to maneuver the digital divide, when we're talking about marginalized communities, when we're talking about families who are struggling every day for shelter, for food, for access. I live in a food desert. And I tell you, sometimes when I drive out of the area, because there's lack of stores here, and I think to myself, wow, at least I have an asset, a tool to get to a store. But what about the community members who do not have tools, who do not have cars, who do not have vehicles, who do not have resources? How are they thriving? What about those who are unsheltered? How are they thriving in the community? And, you know, as I'm looking at the stage and the climate of COVID, I think about post-COVID. What's going to happen to the rental moratorium? What's going to happen when the water moratorium ends? What's going to happen when the PG&E moratorium ends? Are people just going to miraculously have an endless amount of money to pay for their bills? Like, there is so much to be said about COVID and the implications within not just South Stockton, but Stockton in general. To that point, to the world in general, like, how are people going to be able to thrive? And then what's going to happen with the next pandemic, which will be mental health? Let's face it, people have lost life. When someone loses life, it leaves an imprint in the community that is lifelong. That's a trauma. That's a trigger. What happens when you lose your job? I've lost my job. I've had COVID twice. And guess what? I never had an opportunity to stop and heal and really take care of myself because I was taking care of everything else. All of that is impacting to us. And so when I think about the climate and the things that need to be done in this community, that needs to be to happen in our city, it's heavy. And it's not going to be a one woman or a one man band. It starts with community. And so I think that we really need to have a deeper conversation as to how to unify and really address the core issues of COVID and the aftermath of COVID.
Thank you, Councilmember Wormsley. Councilmember Ariola, do you have anything to add to that?
Just briefly, I think that as we approach all these challenges, we really need to make sure that we're focusing the solutions on equity and on people-driven solutions. In the city of Tracy, one of the things that I was able to pass along with former Councilmember Rhodesia Ransom was an equity and an empowerment initiative. And what that did was restructure the framework with how we proceed in governance to make sure that every single city law, program, service is being done equitably and being put out there publicly to be transparent. And unfortunately, we're seeing, you know, similar to what Councilmember Wormsley was saying, is that there are so many people coming from so many different viewpoints, and each of those are valid. But when we're looking at enacting policy, we're at a point now, we can't forget it. There are so many dire challenges right now, but we need to always center it on people and putting it people first and how we're going to solve that. And it can be incredibly frustrating as an elected official, because sometimes you struggle with proposed policy initiatives that are counter to that. One of the things we face in the city of Tracy is this really huge push for sanctuary cities for businesses just open up without any COVID restrictions or limitations. And it's incredibly frustrating, because we do hear and see the struggles that, you know, many of those individuals are coming with. But we also need to really focus and look at people and what we're doing it. In the city of Tracy, we don't even have a homeless shelter. And so we're working, you know, quickly, effectively to try and get the warming center in place to push those, because it needs to be centered on people and how we can solve that. And that's an incredible challenge for everybody and in all the cities throughout the county. It's that kind of those institutional differences that are going to take cohesion to actually solve. So as we do proceed, just to make sure that we're focusing on that equity, focusing on those human solutions for every single step and every policy that we pass forward.
I think that some of the trends and themes that both of you highlighted, first Councilmember Wormsley, and your endless focus on wellness, I am so deeply appreciative that we have a licensed clinical social worker in city government reminding us of the urgent need for us to take care of ourselves and our families, both physically, mentally, holistically. And Councilmember Ariola, your real challenge for us to think about equity, I think, are going to be really important considerations for us as we figure out how to recover as a community from a traumatic year we've experienced. And I know that COVID did nothing but expose some of the inequities that have been present for decades, right? But what gives me hope is this group of community members coming together and articulating a different way. And I think the challenge will be to see how we can step up and really promote that action. I recognize that Tama Brisbane is on the line with us. And so I would love to just allow her to introduce herself and maybe answer the same question if you're willing to build out on some of the things that people have said around what is the state of our city and our community. What do you want people to know about where we're going from here?
Hi, I'm Tama Brisbane, Executive Director of With Our Words, and it is my honor to also be the Poet Laureate for the City of Stockton. How do I see our city? I'm going to come at it a little bit differently, y'all. We are in transition. We are in conflict. A great many of us are in denial. And then I'm going to back it up with some M-sounding words. We are also empowered. We are emblematic of what is wrong, but what can also possibly be right. And we are emergent at the end of it. You know, we are going to get through this. But it's the getting through where I have my greatest angst, because I continue to hear people talk about we have to focus on unity and we have to focus on the coming together. And quite honestly, what I hear when I hear this almost undue focus on let's unify is I hear this, because we have yet to fully vet the problem. We have yet to fully give voice to the problem. We have yet to fully discuss all the things that are happening historically, currently, what that means for the future. We haven't heard everyone's full voice. And so when I hear, well, let's come together, it reminds me of a reflexive response to Black Lives Matter with All Lives Matter. And all that does is that, again, that's a muffling mechanism for me. And until we actually fully vet the problems that we are facing, we're not going to be able to come together. We still have to have uncomfortable conversations. We still have to have bang the table meetings. We still have to use language in the way that it's meant to be used. And that's where, you know, being a poet makes me happy, because the entire world has been mesmerized by the words and the poetry of Youth Poet Laureate Amanda Gorman, because she succinctly and creatively and unmistakably gave voice to the trauma we have been experiencing, but also the hopefulness. And she is the very opposite of the way language is currently being used by our political structure. And they're taking language and turning it into these toxic pretzels. They're twisting it and dipping it in poison and feeding it to the gullible and the resentful, when really what we have to do is just talk to each other and be honest with each other. And sometimes that honesty isn't fun to hear, nor is it fun to say. But if we don't do it, we're not going to get to that unity that we all want to focus on. Because if we're focused on that unity down the road and we miss the rocks that we're liable to stumble over, we're not going to get there. And I don't mean for that to sound unhopeful. I remain optimistic. My meme is wrought iron optimist. You can't bend my optimism. You can't break it. But it is something that I have to temper with a clear-eyed focus on the landscape at hand. So with that, I get off my soapbox.
We love the soapbox, Amati. We do. And how you are always able to root us in what matters in a different way. I see lots of appreciation on our line. I do just want to take a moment to introduce two final ones before I pass it off to George and really get into the meat of what this radio series was, what it exposes now, how we revisit it. And those leaders are Dr. Nancy Huantes-Inzun of Nopal and Sacramento State, and then also our representatives from Fathers and Families of San Joaquin. So I see Irene Kalimlim and Leo Martinez on the line. I think we're getting a lot of really good just insight out of this question. So I'll ask Nancy first and then pass it to our colleagues from FFSJ. What do you make of the state of Stockton? And I would also ask, just given that I know that Dr. Huante, you are indeed an educator in many forms, I would also wonder if you have any insight on what the state of Stockton is for our young people, what the state of Stockton is for our educators, and how we should make sense of these really overwhelming dynamics that we're living through.
Thank you, Lang, for inviting me today and for the introduction. Very important questions. Like Lang said, my name is Dr. Nancy Huantes-Inzun. In Stockton, I co-direct a project called Nopal, which focuses on Chicanx, Latinx youth activism. It hasn't really been a year yet since we've launched the project with my compañero Ricky Gutierrez, but it feels like it's been more than a year because we've been so busy. And then the other part of me, I'm a professor, so I teach ethnic studies at Sacramento State University. And just last year, I started getting back into research. So I'm currently working with folks at SUSD to basically research ethnic studies and the impact on young people, or getting that started. We haven't started yet, but we're already thinking about, you know, making sure that we document this work and this history. And then my other work is with also documenting the impact of College Promise initiatives, which are so important. Things like, you know, Stockton Scholars, for example, and other initiatives that support our young people, right, in their pursuit of higher education. And so the state of the city, I'll be brief because I know that a lot has been said, and I definitely echo Mama T conversations, right? Of having courageous conversations. I think that, you know, COVID-19, like Lang said earlier as well, has really brought us back, right, to think about these issues that have been issues for longer than I have been alive. Issues of poverty, issues of racism, colorism, all these things that we are taught to look past or to maybe not think about at all. And I think that that's the task at hand, right? And Stockton specifically is that we need to take a moment to really talk about those uncomfortable things. I mean, I don't speak for everyone in the Chicanx, Latinx community, but as a Chicana myself, growing up in a Mexican household, the conversations around racism came and went, right? In terms of my background as an immigrant, but we never really got to heal from the trauma. And I think that we got to talk about these issues while at the same time, we need to do some transformative healing. And that's a lot of work. I see that a lot here in Stockton, right? The future. That's why I teach ethnic studies. And honestly, it's the intersection of ethnic studies and education. How do we make sure that these places continue to live and that we are able to offer this at a community-based level? So places like Little Manila Rising is an important project. The projects that are led by Mama T, right, around being able to be writers and poets and being able to document the work in that way. So again, I think that the city of Stockton, we've been through a lot. We're resilient, though. We're super badass. There's so many great examples of us surviving, but we can't just move along trying to teach folks how to survive these systems of oppression. We also need to get the work running on how to change systems and dismantle and create. And if we have to dismantle them, I would say as Stocktonians, we should take on that challenge and join other movements across the state and the nation who are saying, yeah, basta, right? Like, this is enough. And so I am encouraged, but I also know that there's a ton of work ahead of us, but I'm ready. We've been ready, at least some of the people that are on here, all of the people, we've been ready, we're doing this work, and now we just need to create stronger solidarity points and heal as a collective, because that's also another issue. Some folks are not ready to face the healing process as a group, but that's not their fault, right? Because this is compounded trauma. This is generational trauma. So anyways, thank you for inviting me. I'll probably stay on for a little longer and then step away.
Thank you, Nancy. I want to thank everybody that joined us. I'm Nicholas Hatton, the principal with LGBT Social Justice Initiative. And so I thank you on behalf of this collective for joining us. I do want to speak to one thing that real quick, Lang, if you don't mind. And that's the conversations that families have. And what has been so interesting is hearing from people like Holly Berry and Kamala Harris, our vice president, and other mixed African-Americans who have all shared how they at one point were sat down by their mothers, their white mothers, including our former President Obama, and told, you are Black, and these are going to be your challenges being Black. I question, because I know in my upbringing in Stockton, we never had that conversation, and I question how many parents sit their children down and have those conversations. And in particular, within our Latinx communities, I think that Stockton culturally has done a great job of acknowledging its diversity, but not acknowledging the importance of understanding the nuances within that diversity. And I think that that leads to us becoming adults and thinking that we are diverse and I don't need to understand, which then leads to implicit bias, which I think has really impacted who we are as people today. And I think the local election results is a complete reflection of that. And so I hope that those of you who are listening to the doctor speak and talk about those important conversations that families have, that we do when our youth are young. And that was the connecting thread with all of these wonderful mixed actors and leaders, is that the parents sat down with them at a very early age and started to inform them of who they are and how that plays in society. And so hopefully more and more families will take Dr. Nancy's cues and start having those conversations. So that's just the point that I wanted to share.
Thank you, Nicholas. I do want to wrap up by introducing the last of our community panelists before I pass it to Mr. George Koster to kind of transition into our conversation around the radio series and really revisiting that radio series. And the last community representative is Ms. Irene Kalimlim. Irene and Leo are here representing Fathers and Families of San Joaquin. Would love to pass that question to you as well. What's the state of Stockton in your opinion? What have we missed, or what would you like us to focus on and add on to?
I can go. Yeah, I definitely feel what everyone's saying about a lot of challenges ahead. COVID, just continued pressure on racial equity, as well as the climate crisis as well. But I actually feel pretty hopeful just seeing the room of people here. I think a lot of people from my generation have been observing and watching the actions for a lot of the organizers here, and that in turn inspired us to take up leadership. And so there's so many things now that I think are happening and are really transformative because of a lot of the organizing and seeds that were laid down by a lot of people in this room. So Little Manila has been pushing for ethnic studies, and now that's becoming a thing in our Stockton Unified School District. I know at Fathers and Families, ever since our founding in 2003, our biggest campaign has been around closing youth prisons. Just last year, it was finally announced that they're going to be closing the Stockton Department of Juvenile Justice facilities and trying to transition to a more healing-centered, culturally-based approach that is trauma-informed rather than punishment, incarceration, and locking people up. And that's really beautiful. And then more the area that I'm focusing in, Stockton is just really challenged with a lot of environmental justice issues. But, you know, just last year, we were able to receive $10 million in investment for transformative climate communities, on board to have maybe another $40 million for the air pollution cleanup with the AB617. And those things are all just really promising on what can be changed and what things we can see because of all the organizing that has been done the last 10 years, longer than that. And I even feel hopeful now, even seeing people, the next generation below me, people like Princess, who's been organizing for like the Stockton Coalition for Shared Safety in School, some of the Little Manila advocates, and with our ward youth advocates that are using their voice to decry environmental justice in the Delta. And, you know, I really think there's a strong culture in Stockton of community organizing because people are seeing a reflection of themselves in the generation above organizing. And it can be definitely like a really powerful thing now that we have these three generations of strong youth organizers in Stockton and that intergenerational movement. So that's just some of the hope that I am feeling despite all the challenges that are happening.
Thank you so much, Irene. And I really love your amplification and lifting up of these amazing youth advocates, activists, organizers, as you mentioned, who really do give us a lot of hope.
You're listening to Voices of the Community on KWDC 93.5 in Stockton. This is George Koster, your host. And if you're just joining us, in this episode, we're discussing the opportunity that is Stockton. Where do we go from here? A reflective conversation with Stockton and San Joaquin County community leaders about all of their ongoing work to address the issues facing both Stockton and San Joaquin County. Let's get back to our conversation led by Lang Lentau.
I see that we're joined by our brother, Sammy Nunez, the founder of Fathers and Families of San Joaquin.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you, Sammy. And I think that the question we've been asking a lot of the panelists really is just what's, in their opinion, the state of the city of Stockton? What's the state of our communities? And so I wonder if you have any thoughts on that in your perspective.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you so much. It's a really great question. I actually heard some of Irene's commentary earlier today, and I couldn't be just prouder of our team and how they represent in these spaces. And I echo everything she said was spot on. I think that it's a double-edged sword, I think, right now. It's a duality of life. We've been ravaged by this. We've been hardest hit by this. We are the community where I think that's obviously exposed and accelerated some of the inequities that we've already been experiencing in Stockton. And we know the history. We've been there. We've read it. We've understood it. We have our own data on it. We understand how we got here. And we bear the fruits of our histories, don't we? And so it's not by an accident. It's not a surprise. Some people might say it's by design. And frankly, you know, that's why, you know, stealing a page out of Angela Glover Blackwell's playbook, equity is a superior growth model. When we focus on equity, when we focus on inclusion, we focus on living up to our spouse values as the Golden State, as a great Central Valley, as a city that is the most diverse city in America, that has where folks are migrating to, and actually the opportunities that promise. When we saw what happened in the insurrection in the Capitol. The reason it's very emotional, because that is the promise that we are still waiting to have kind of, you know, make good on, is this promise that this city should provide its Stocktonian residents, the promise of opportunity that has been denied. And so I think that we're harnessing that by intergenerational bottom up, you know, all hands on deck movement. But we also know that there's great resistance to this, right? Or not even, we are the resistance. Within oppression, there is also great restraining forces that are at work and at play. And we've learned some valuable lessons about how to organize differently. We organize in the good old-fashioned way. We go into the community and knock on doors. And I think that there's been some lessons in terms of some of the actual setbacks we've had that are tremendous, really. We know that, you know, there's a lot of indicators that suggest that we are definitely not out of the woods yet. The pandemic is not done with us yet. And we as a city have not realized our full potential yet and have not fully reinvented or reimagined what our city should and could be, that potential and that promise. So I think that there's opportunities. I think that we have the eyes of the governor right now and his administration. I think all folks that are interested in whether it's the scalable economies and the inclusive economy, or whether it's homelessness, or whether it's the issues of mass incarceration and now decarceration, or educational equity and the pursuit of educational excellence for our students that deserve better. I think that there's great indicators that suggest that these are big world problems. These are big national issues. These are the what we're faced with and we're struggling through has great implications across the nation. And I think that it's going to be a struggle. And we know that. And I think we should prepare for that. And I think the way we show up for each other says a lot. Or when we don't show up for each other also is very loud. And I think that we need to practice compassion and harmony. I think we need to integrate a lot of our strategies. I think that we need to do our own research, push our own policies, and push our own kind of robust and powerful and radical agenda. We cannot allow despair to have the final word, as Cornel West said.
Whew. Sammy touched on such important points around the information that our community members are getting about matters that are of grave importance to all of us, about how we will maintain this momentum for an equity-driven, progressive agenda. Thank you for those points. As we're nearing kind of the end of this gathering, I do have a couple more questions, but I would love to begin opening it up. So if anyone does have thoughts or reflections or reactions to what folks are sharing, please feel free to either unmute yourself or let me know. I know Nicholas had a point.
So I want to make sure that she has an opportunity to speak. But, you know, as disappointing as this election was, I think that those that oppose us have this assumption that our movement is where we're at. It's the position that we're currently in. And so they do everything that they can, you know, to get us to move from those positions. But if somebody's very passionate about community and about change, it doesn't matter if they have an elected official title. It doesn't matter if they're an executive director of a nonprofit. You are going to find a way to improve your community. And so you have two sets of people. You have the obstructionists, who a lot of times are being paid in one way or another to obstruct, to keep the status quo. And then you have people that really care about community. And those people are not going away. Those people are going to be here for years. And even if they move away, they're still going to be involved. And so my message is to the obstructionists, be a part of the solution. Don't obstruct what others are doing. Sit down with a piece of paper and a pen and come up with solutions of your own, because we are not going anywhere. You may take my title. I may have to find another outlet, but I'm going to continue my work, and all of us are going to continue our work, because we realize that if we don't, it's going to be our young boys and our young girls and our young siblings of color who sacrifice, who die prematurely, whose quality of life is less because we don't succeed. And looking at all of these beautiful names and beautiful faces that are part of this discussion, I know you all are determined and you all will succeed, because I know your will and I know your talent and I know your ability. And so while the trajectory has changed, the goals are still the same, and we will get to the point when our diversity is celebrated by our diversity's success.
Yes, we will. I think that the point that Nicholas just made leads me to an important question, which is, I know that there are some folks that may be watching this that may not be as involved as you all. They might not be formally members of some of the organizations you represent, but might want to get involved. And so I'm wondering if any of you have either reflections on what's coming next or how folks can get more involved. What is most critical for those who might want to be allies of this work for social justice and racial equity and just a more inclusive city? Jasmine, I saw that you might have something quick to add, or I would love to hear other thoughts.
Well, I think you said it well. You know, thank you to all those who are on this call. You know, when Lane was speaking and when I heard Nicholas, it reminded me of one of the things my mentor and boss says, you know, that there's a lane for everybody. And I think in this moment, we're recognizing that there's really, truly a lane for everybody to get involved in this work. And, you know, to Nicholas's point is like, grappling with this moment and time and of where we are in this country, where we are in the city. I'm reminded of Dr. King and some of the folks who ground us in the principles of Kenyan nonviolence. And I think if when we think about how we get into this work, we know that nonviolence is sort of a way of life for courageous people. So when Nicholas is talking about confronting sort of these forces of injustice and utilizing sort of our righteous indignation of both emotional and intellectual capabilities of where we are as a people, I think it challenges us to reconcile with this moment about where we are in this city. And so one of the things that I just wanted to encourage our people who is listening and doing this work on the grounds is that we never lost this fight. You know, the fight is not over. We recognize that these systems were historically against us, right? Against Black, Indigenous, people of color, Native people to this land. And every day we are constantly fighting. And one of the principles of Kenyan nonviolence as well is, you know, attack forces of evil and not persons doing evil. So when we recognize that we're not attacking individuals, we're really attacking and uprooting a system that has fundamentally been built against us. And I think that this moment is calling for us to really reconcile with these issues that are happening and address them face forward. And I am hopeful for the future of this city and know that there are great, amazing leaders who are rising up to this moment, who are recognizing that our democracy is under attack and that we aren't backing down, and that young people will continue to rise and really continue to reclaim this narrative that they thought they won. And I'll end off with a Mexican proverb, you know, that says that they tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. And I hope people recognize that we are continuing to fight and uprise against the injustices that are happening on all levels. So I'm going to stop, but I heard Sammy, I heard Lang, I heard Nicholas, and, you know, thanks for this conversation, but do not be discouraged, our people. We are continuing to do this fight.
That's right, Jazzy. I just want to say that it's good to remember, too, that in, you know, MLK, Cesar, they were not necessarily always loved for their beliefs and fighting for those beliefs. There was overwhelming, you know, overwhelming odds they were against and people that were trying to undermine them, and including, you know, our own government, our own people in places of power that feared this kind of transformation. So very good to remember that. And they elevated their tactics. Nonetheless, I think it's always good to begin with honoring our ancestors and their freedom fight and how this is a continuum of that. And I think that if we really realize our full potential and we harmonize and we build this cohesive community and we decolonize, not just mobilize, but we decolonize and these imposed kind of, where do you go for truth? Does truth even matter? Because it's so pervasive. I think the greatest thing we could do is show love. I think that my people have always shown love, even when they haven't been loved upon. They always worked hard to actually provide for their families. And I think if anything, if I could just invite people to show up with love, I think that's the most radical thing we can do, because the fire in our belly is because we love our people and we're in a collective struggle right now. And we need to know that we all have a place in this, because we all actually are interconnected. And I think that if we see that sacredness, that sacred relationships that we have, I think we can't fail. We'll only win. And we're not afraid. We're not afraid of nobody. And we are very proud of our city, of our people, of our resilience. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're on the winning side of history. Just know that. It just gets uncomfortable. You have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable in this fight. They call it a struggle for a reason. It's not going to come easy. They're not just going to hand it over. We have to fight every step of the way. We have to organize every day. We have to show up all the time. And we have to be all in.
I love it. Mobilizing, inspiring. I'm going to pass one more question to the rest of this group before we close up. And it's about hope and where we're going. Because I think that we've heard a lot about what we've done, where we've come, the challenges we're up against. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about what is giving us hope for that next step before we close up. But George, I know we're weaving in an amazing gift that you gave us, which was an archive of the work that we've done over the past several years. And I'm curious if, upon reflection, if there are any reflections you have around the project met your expectations, or if there were things that you learned that were different than what you expected. I guess I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on reflecting back some of the things that you have seen in this community that might inform that conversation about hope.
I mean, what gives me wonderful hope is the fact that you're all still gathered. If you do get a chance to go back and listen to those interviews with yourselves 4 years ago, going on five, I mean, to me, they were really inspiring. They're really wonderful profiles of hope and profiles of change and profiles of people who, to Sammy's point, you know, are not giving up. And I guess that's why I reached back out to Nicholas at the end of last year, is because, you know, I'm not giving up hope for my old hometown and for all of you, you know, support the efforts on the ground. And I've worked with Fred on some affordable housing. In fact, some of the money I inherited from my mom who died in Stockton, I put into affordable housing in South Stockton because I wanted to do something for South Stockton, the neighborhood I grew up in as a kid coming in and out of Stockton. And I feel like my expectations were as much about discovery, what was going on. And what's really wonderful to see is here we are 5 years later, and that you're actually manifesting all of the stuff that you talked about 5 years ago, and you're on the ground making change. And I love the fact that, you know, the message I carry through today is, you know, not only it's about reflection, but it's that whole thing of renew. You guys are renewing your commitment to each other, renewing your commitment to the community. And to me, it's a wonderful series of stories and a time capsule, if you will, but really just such a wonderful piece of foundational community grassroots power.
Absolutely. And so I think that is a good transition to the last question I have, which is just about hope. So what is giving y'all hope as we move into this next phase of our work? Is there anything that you'd like to focus the kind of listeners or our community on? Or is there any challenge you'd like to offer them?
We can now roll up our sleeves and get some work done. John Lewis would not have left us if he didn't think that we could continue to get in some good trouble. And when my brother Sammy talks about we're going to lead with love, I need people, and I'm going to do something real black right now. I need people to understand leading with love doesn't mean you can push us around. It means I love this thing enough. I love this work enough to stand resolute, because that's what it's going to take. Do not mistake love for timidity. Do not mistake love for weakness. Do not mistake love for reticence. Especially do not mistake love for me not being willing to take off these earrings and have a confrontation if that's what it takes. We're not going to divert ourselves. We're going to have to go through this. There is going to be conflict. There is going to be confrontation. Are we leading with peace? Are we leading with hope? Are we leading with our best intentions? Absolutely. That doesn't mean we take a step back. So if sometimes we got to get face to face with an enemy, we got to get face to face with an enemy. Having a courageous conversation also means having a difficult dialogue. We still move forward. It would be a good idea to move with us, because in the end, we still win. There's more of us than there are of them.
Well, if I could just add to that real quick, you know, when I first started my advocacy, I was always called young man. And this is when I was in my 30s, and I'm no longer that. But to see leaders like Irene and, you know, Philip and the two Leos, who I want to thank for your tech support and making this event happen. I'm so jazzed that we have younger leaders who are now stepping in, so that the blue haireds that really have controlled and led the progressive movement for decades and decades stop calling me young, because they're the ones that are young. But what's even more exciting is that we have a new generation of young leaders that we're empowering, that we are came to tell our story. And our media project, which we're launching next month, where we are empowering those youth to tell our stories, is going to be the big difference. So I am looking forward to Irene and Philip and the Leo's generation taking charge and leading these even younger leaders to do our work.
May I just say real quick, Lang, I feel like I'm trying to catch up with everybody right now, man. I'm feeling this conversation is a good conversation to have, and this idea of hope, you know, and this is kind of a tricky one, right? Kind of a tricky thing, because everybody wants hope. Everybody needs hope. You can't survive without hope, but you can't see hope. Hope won't feed your family. Hope won't give you shelter. Hope won't provide you with the quality education and prepare you for a career that you can break through the bondage of poverty. So, but hope, you can't survive without it. And I think there's a term in Spanish that really captures this very well. It's called esperanza. That's what hope is, literally meaning waiting for hope. And I would say, and this is no cliche, we are absolutely, indisputably the hope we've been waiting for. Ain't no one else going to do the work except the folks on this call that take time out of their day, that go and feed the homeless, that go and show up for our elders, that go and tutor a young person, that show up to the city council, that show up to the rallies, that show up to the press conferences. Show up is the first sign of hope. And that's what we need. We need that kind of revolutionary hope, not that hokey dokey kind of hope, that real deal Holyfield hope. That's how hope looks in action.
Whew. That revolutionary hope. I love that. I know we are wrapping up. I know we're just over time. So I know folks may have to jump off, but I would love to hear if there are any final thoughts or are there any final reflections.
I just want to thank everyone for participating. It was really great. So thanks again for everyone's participation, and really appreciate it. And it gives me great hope to see all of you coming together to continue to push forward.
Ditto. Well, thank you all for giving me the energy and the inspiration I needed. I hope everyone has a good afternoon and evening. Stay safe, stays dry as much as possible, and always be challenging ourselves to figure out how we can be extending compassion and love to those individuals and communities.
That's it for this episode of Voices of the Community. You've been listening to the voices of community leaders in Stockton and San Joaquin County. I want to thank our radio host, Leo and Adriana at KWDC, along with Lang for hosting today's conversation, and Nicholas for bringing together all the voices on today's show. I also want to thank the community leaders who shared all of their insights and work to address the many issues facing both Stockton and San Joaquin County community members. For more information and to get engaged with the community leaders featured on today's show, along with listening to the 13-part documentary series on the city of Stockton, go to georgecoster.com, click on Voices of the Community, and then click on Stockton. We hope that you enjoyed the insights, points of view, and personal stories from the voices of changemakers and their nonprofits and small businesses featured in the series. To find out more and get engaged with the nonprofits, small businesses, and staff members featured in the series, please go to my website, georgecoster.com, and click on Voices of the Community to find links to the extended versions of these interviews and to listen to the entire series. After listening to these stories, we hope that you will consider making a donation and volunteering to provide a hand up to your fellow community members. I want to thank my associate producer, Eric Estrada, and graphics wizard Casey Nance of Citron Studios. Also, I want to give a very big special thanks to Leo Marquez and Adriana Broger at KWDC, which is hosted by San Joaquin Delta College in Stockton. Leo and Adriana have worked with us over the past 4 years to bring the many voices of Stockton community leaders in our Stockton documentary series to the Stockton and San Joaquin County community. You can listen to all of their local programming at kwdc.fm, and take media classes at San Joaquin Delta College so you too can share your voice. Voices of the Community is a member of Intersection for the Arts, which allows us to offer you a tax deduction for your contributions. Please go to georgecoster.com and click on the donate link to make a donation to help us provide future shows just like this one. While you're on our website, you can enjoy our archived past shows, which feature community voices working on solutions to critical issues facing Northern California communities, and you can sign up for our newsletter to find out more about future shows, as well as shows and events from the organizations that are included in our episodes. Take us along on your next COVID walk by subscribing to Voices of the Community on Apple Podcast, Spotify, and Google Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at George Koster, and we'd love to hear from you with feedback and show ideas, so send us an email to george@georgekoster.com. I'm George Koster in San Francisco, and thank you for listening.